Well, hello there, it's Antrice, and welcome to another episode of the Savvy Painter Podcast. You know, until I started my own podcast, I had no idea how much work it takes to keep one going. That's why so many podcasts disappear so quickly. Did you know that the average podcast lasts less than 6 months? And even when you include mega hits like NPR Serial or This American Life or one of my favorites, On Being, all told, the average podcast gets less than 300 downloads per episode. Savvy Painter averages more than 7,000 unique downloads. And there's even some that are 25,000. Apparently, I'm doing something right. And look, I know it's not perfect, but I have somehow managed to keep this podcast going for more than 4 years by myself. I am no Ira Glass or Terry Gross, but did you know that they have an average of 15 to 20 people working on each episode, doing research, coordinating guests, creating graphics, writing scripts, keeping the website up, keeping the technology working, handling promotions and social media and marketing, and still responding to listeners? They have a whole team working behind the scenes so that the host can focus on the interviews. Guess who does all of that for Savvy Painter? I do. It's me, all by myself. It's a lot of work. They also have people who edit the podcast, handle the sound engineering, write the show notes, upload the final episode for distribution, and upload and publish all of that to all of the podcast channels and the website so that listeners can just click a button and hear an episode. I work with an amazing company called Podcast Fast Tracks who does all of that for me. And thank God, because if I didn't have them, I would be curled up in a little ball in the corner of my studio. Point being, there is a ton of work that you never see, and it's not cheap. It costs about $1,000 a month to keep Savvy Painter going, and that's because I do most of it myself. My guess is you had no idea what happens behind the scenes to make sure that you get an episode every other week without fail. I had no idea either before I started, which is probably a good thing. So I'm asking for your help to keep this podcast going. A small monthly donation makes all the difference. It's just the price of a cup of coffee or a single tube of student-grade earth tone paint. I'm not talking professional cadmiums or cobalt violet or anything weird like that. Just the most basic burnt umber. Just a small donation like that from you would help a lot to keep this podcast going. You can make a difference. At a minimum, I would love it if I didn't have to explain to my accountant why I'm still doing that quote-unquote little podcast. Go to savvypainter.com/support. Big or small, your contribution matters. Thank you so very much. This week on the Savvy Painter Podcast, my guest is Christina Steinbrecher-Funt. Christina is the artistic director of Vienna Contemporary, the annual art fair in Austria, which is coming up soon, September 27th through the 30th, 2018. Christina's helped put together 10 art fairs since the Moscow art fair approached her at a gallery she was working at and made what was a very interesting offer. In this episode, Christina gives us a behind-the-scenes glimpse into what it takes to put one of these events together. We talk about the time it takes for art fairs to mature into events that galleries, artists, and collectors get excited about, and more importantly, return to every year. It's as much about the curation as it is the tiniest of details, like knowing enough about human behavior to realize that lighting can make a crowd turn right rather than left when they enter a venue, and that way people distribute themselves evenly throughout the hall. We talk about the selection process for Vienna Contemporary, how Christina helped grow the art fair, and what she hopes will be the next phase of social media for artists. Here is Christina Steinbrecher-Funt from Vienna Contemporary. Christina, welcome to the Savvy Painter Podcast. I am delighted to speak with you today.
So am I. Hello from Vienna.
Give us a little bit of background. How did you get into the field of organizing art fairs? That's kind of an unusual job.
As a child, I was fascinated by art. I grew up next to the Ludwig Museum in Cologne, and there was boys there was the Düsseldorf Photography School. And so I was surrounded by artists, and Cologne at that time was the epicenter for art together with New York. And I started then working in a gallery for Volker Diehl. And then people from the Moscow Art Fair in Moscow, Russia, came to talk to me and asked me whether I wanted to run artistically Art Moscow, the fair for contemporary art in Moscow. And they said I could do many exciting things, not just run a gallery, but since the art fair has so many different tasks to do, so I could just have a go at everything, at the whole planning. And it did sound tempting. So I started that job, and I did that for 3 years. And then people from Vienna came to talk to me and invited me over to run the fair in Vienna. And so I'm doing it in the 7th year. So it will be a total of 10 art fair editions that I'm now doing.
Wow, that's a lot of art fairs.
Definitely. And it's a lot of visiting art fairs and looking at other art fairs, you know, and understanding of the industry. But it's a lot of fun. I'm very blessed to do that.
What were some of the most surprising things that, you know, when you initially started with the Moscow Art Fair, what were some of the things about planning it that surprised you the most?
When doing an art fair, you start and you will actually only see the real result of your work in about 3 years. So we talk in art fairs, it cycles. So since basically it takes a whole year to produce an international art fair, an art fair is always comprised of different elements, of exhibitors that participate, of visitors, local visitors from that particular city or country, and international visitors. And since so many different puzzle pieces have to fall into place to really come to one result or to another, you can actually, and the planning period for something, I don't know, for exhibitors to plan, because you doing it right now, for them to actually take that decision to come, it's most likely not when you start the job, but it will take 1 to 2 years to actually like make them come. So it is with museum people, curators, and so on and so on to come. So this was pretty much the first big factor that I had to learn, that it really takes time and you have to be patient. So nothing works like that or falls into place, but you really need to plan meticulously and love the detail. But if you do, you will get a result. And, you know, that takes some understanding, because people learn or want a quick result, but it really takes its time. So, and I see it even after the 7th edition of that will be taking place end of September, that going around Art Basel, for example, people come to me now in the 7th year and say, Christina, yes, of course, I'm going to join this year. And I said, like, you know that it took you 7 years to make that decision. People are busy with their lives, with their particular contexts, with their particular cities and things they do. It sometimes or mostly takes a lot of time.
I think that a lot of people know that intellectually, but their concept of what a lot of time means can be very different. So I think for some people, a lot of time is 1 year or 2 years, and they can't really fathom spending 7 years trying to, you know, get particular people to come, and might see that as a failure that they weren't able to do it faster.
I mean, I'm doing it for a really long time. Of course, you set yourself every year new goals, you know, but it's just that you cannot make the world dance around you within that moment, you know? It just takes, in order to get someone, it takes someone else to come. And then you understand that in order to actually get to your goal, you need to do this and that and that. You do, like, you have to take steps in between. That's what it takes. And then you eventually will reach that big final goal. It's a maturity process. You mature. And I wouldn't, for example, in year 1 or 2, I would know who to talk to in terms of exhibitors. I know what artists it needed in order to mature and to get better as a fair and what galleries it needed. And I knew that, I don't know, I couldn't in the first 2 years talk to blue chip galleries because it didn't make sense neither for them, neither for us. And just having a blue chip doesn't mean that you're getting a better an art fair. You need to be sustainable because every gallery needs to understand what they do, why they do it. Just to make people, I don't know, famous or glorious people and galleries to come is not a way to success. You really need to understand your context, the context of other places, and why you want this particular person to come and what is in for that person or for you as a place. You really need that equilibrium. You cannot, I mean, you can burn that many bridges, but eventually you need to still walk a bridge, you know, and then there still should be feasible. And that's an art fair.
I mean, you mentioned that there's that maturity that needs to happen as you're developing an art fair, but what are some of the things that you look for in artists that you're going to invite? And how did that change over the years as your fair matured?
We talk about different styles of art fairs. So we have the global art fairs. I'm running an international art fair. Global means Basel, the Basel branches, where global galleries that deal all over the world participate because of that connection. I'm running an international art fair that its main strength is Europe, with European galleries and European collectors, obviously also coming from the US or from the Asian market, but the main core is Europe. And what I was looking in is I'm looking for a gallery. I have to make that trade-off. A gallery has to represent interesting artists that are demanded in one way or the other. In a local scene, in their local place, it might most of the time it's not Austria, not Vienna, but I need to have a different, like a foreign gallery to come. So they show fairly established artists that have been around. So it shouldn't be only new, not seen before artists, because I have a gallery commission system. So I have a committee that is selecting the galleries. So I have to present them galleries that are working with already fairly established artists, ideally have in their portfolio already an artist that is known, that you might have heard before, but you might not have seen him, but you might have read about it in that particular context. It doesn't need to be very famous or known in Austria, not really, but just something that you need to find so that people that would Google or look for it, that they would find a context so that it's not completely like a blank page. Because I want galleries to sell. And having galleries that only deal with very young, that take over artists from universities that come with a blank page, it doesn't make sense for the galleries in that sense, and it doesn't make sense for me, because obviously I want the galleries that come to sell, and they should have work that the clients that are coming, collectors, that they can find by asking people information about, so that it's not just a void, that it's not just coming out from the void, because people need some affirmation in order to take one decision. So I need that information. This has to come with a solid base of information so that people who want to buy can take a decision. So I want the sustainable factor, the people that actually come and exhibit can actually sell. That's what I need to make sure.
Maintain that balance of something really interesting and not so, you know, that they've seen 100 times, and yet somebody that has a history that people who are going to the fairs can really easily find that. That makes a lot of sense.
So art fair have a hard reputation sometimes as, well, it's so hard on the galleries to participate. Yes, but it turns out that art fairs are a good marketplace to sell art. And what we really try to make sure is that there are enough clients to come that could actually buy. And we try to really make that selection work as good as we can and to make it possible for the galleries to sell and for the clients to buy. Because this is, I need to make my clients come back. So what I need most is galleries that want to come back. The repeated customer is the best customer, of course.
Yes, yes. So would you say your clients are the people who come to the art fairs, the people that you're bringing into the art fairs?
So it's the one of the oldest models, business models of the world. You sell square meters, right? So you have a certain location, and then you sell square meters. You define a price for a square meter, and then you sell these square meters. On the other hand, you select the galleries. You try to make the best portfolio that is interesting, that is established. And on the other hand, you as an art fair go around and invite people to come to your fair and to that particular city, to a certain program that you have developed, a VIP program that is in the city, that is taking place, and that is as varied as possible, as interesting as possible, and you connect these dots, you know. And so if people are happy, have a good conversation, meet new people, so that these connections are being made, sales are being made, people meet people, decided to do an exhibition together, decide that they like that particular artist, want to give them a residency, and so on and so on, you know. So the actual point of business can be different. It's not only sales, but it can be a show at a different gallery, a show at a museum, a residency program, an interest of a curator in a particular artist who then, I don't know, a year later will invite an artist to do a show at a museum. Or it can be that, I don't know, a curator takes around a museum director and says, listen, this is the work. It should be in the museum collection. What do you think? And then this whole conversation lasts in a year that they love a particular piece. And then the museum in 1 year acquires a piece of work, you know? So the time spans can vary a lot, but all of these conversations happen at the fair.
That makes absolute sense. It's kind of like, I think most business starts with a cup of coffee or something along those lines, something very simple.
And also, I mean, I have to say dealers, galleries, I mean, they are enthusiasts. They really love what they do. And every time I really admire that quality. I mean, galleries love artists. I mean, they have a love-hate relationship, but they really love art. And they would go around, and I know so many gallerists that would ultimately also buy from a colleague, you know, because they love an artist. And it's like, I can't help it. I just need to buy a certain work. Or they, of course, also agree to share an artist to show, to invite them over to do a show at a different gallery. So that's nice too, you know?
Yeah, that's very nice. Do artists need to be in a gallery to somehow participate in an art fair?
I mean, there are different art fair models. So there are also art fairs where artists can apply directly to an art fair. That's also happening. And that's fair enough. And that's good. But in my case, in Vienna Contemporary, artists cannot apply directly. So our first clients are the galleries that then represent their artist list that they work with.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the most interesting, this is just kind of like as the, you know, you mentioned the conversations that happen. I'm just curious if there's any particular, like really interesting conversations that you've had or things that you've seen that are at an art fair that are kind of out of the ordinary and came up with a, resulted in something interesting happening.
The art world is full of really unexpected things. It's like, for me, it's really difficult now to pull out one particular conversation. I'm many times really stunned, or several times a day, I guess, I'm stunned, you know? So I guess it's something unexpected. So we had a really difficult installation of an artist, Albert Meyer. It's an Austrian artist from a quite young gallery from Cologne. And it was really a difficult installation of a sound piece with broken glasses and water. It was like a system. Something was dropping and then it did something else and then it did something else. So it was beautiful, but the gallerist was like, nah, it's never going to sell. Never is going to sell. Because it was so difficult, so fragile and water. And it was like really from a collector's point of view, it's like really painful like to deal with that and there. And basically day one, a museum comes around really unexpected, normally not very daring in terms of their portfolio. And they go like, wow, we want it. And she was like building it up and she was really already like, will it work? Will it last the whole fair, this dropping system? And then first, boom, 1 hour, first hour in, she's like, we sold. I cannot believe. We sold to a museum that I never would have expected that they would be even looking at an installation as difficult as that. So that's what I'm saying. She was probably not like super motivated to really show it. It was difficult. It was difficult on her. And then her expectations were like, oh yeah, I love this artist. I'm going to show it. Of course, I'm motivated, but she never expected it. And then she would just like sell. And that's beautiful moments like that, you know, because the artist is also not like, he knows he wants to show it. He's very excited to show it to other artists, but also his expectations were not very high of selling it, you know, and especially to a fairly conservative museum like that, like, no. So I love situations like that or collaborations of artists that just meet each other at the fair and then, I don't know, do a concert together because they found out sitting at the fair in a cafe that they enjoy making music. And yeah, they show a different booth, but they decided to do a concert together, you know, like things like that. Or I love that people, collectors also meet each other from, I don't know, someone from the Lebanon would meet someone from Berlin. And then 1 year later, they tell me, well, we met them. We went to the Lebanon. We saw their collection. And then they came over to Berlin, saw our collection. And now we decided to meet again in Vienna, you know. So running an art fair it's not the most thankful job in the art industry because you are service. So we provide service and we try to, dependent on so many things, right? You're dependent on your gallerists, that they come, that they are in a good shape, that they are ready to sell, that they have good works that they ultimately bring, so that they invite people, that you invite people, so that everyone comes. And, you know, working with individuals, it's not like a machine. It's not like a computer system that you just fix, you know, if something is showing an error message. It's people working together. And it's a lot of people working together in a small space for 5 days, installing. And then the 5 days, everyone is tired because the program is running late. And then you go out. And it's great to see this energy, you know, that pumps in. And people are there to celebrate art in a way, you know. So if everything runs smoothly, people get really excited. So you just provide this platform and it has to live, you know. You try to systematically think what to do, like, I don't know, the lighting, the color of the invitations, I don't know, the music. So during installation phase, if you serve that drink, so, you know, like for the galleries, you really try to think of a nice setup so that people are in a good mood installing, because it's also like, it's helpful. Do you serve a little bit like free sandwiches, or you make like, or do you get a sponsor to do like free sandwiches, or everyone has to pay, I don't know, €2 for sandwich? It really makes like small things. So you have like free coffee, free espresso, you know, just like, boom, everyone gets like a shot of coffee and everyone seems to be. So like, it's really, you think with the team, and every department is trying to service all of their clients, and then it eventually comes together, yeah? And that's really nice. You're trying to like set up that platform, but then the baby has to run in a way, you know? And then everyone is taking off and everything is taking off, and you can only fix that much, you know? You have to really pre-stage everything before. You know, we think is that day the party better, or is it that day the party better? Because this is right after the opening, everyone will be tired, or is it better the next day? You really think of people, how people behave, and then you try to make the smartest decision for a group of people.
That's really interesting. My experience with art fairs is just as somebody who, you know, attending one. So it's really fascinating to hear the behind the scenes. It's more like, you know, what happens before to get everybody who is participating, who's actually in the booth, excited and not exhausted when the doors open. It sounds like it's as much about event planning as it is about presenting the art and maintaining people's energy levels.
Of course, and you want it. So we also have the artists. So we always provide like tickets for the artists. And it means so much, you know, if artists come and bring their friends. And we always have, try to get the whole art community over. And if everyone is happy with the light, you know, because then it's the light. It really becomes like as meticulous because you have to really think about the flow on the ground. You don't just build hallways, you know, you try to think, okay, how do I do that people take the decision to go equally left and right? We started at the beginning, the first year, we really started counting. We had someone standing there to see how the flow is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because it just takes too long. So if people turn always left, do a whole left turn, and then it would take too long to fill the right-hand side of the hall. Ultimately, like, our task is to make people happy, you know, and we really take our job in that part, like, serious to see how can we spread. So what is it? Is it like that it needs a lighter hall, you know, in order to take maybe the people tend to go left first and then right. So how do you change that behavior by putting up a brighter lighting system, you know?
That is fascinating.
Yeah, you have that one. It's like Christmas, you know, you like plan Christmas dinner and you plan it and you want to have like the whole family happy and you really like take it to the next stage and then next stage because you only have one time to perform. It's not like a museum show, you know, like you produce that show and then that show, but you really have one time to really make, we have 30,000 visitors, to really impress them and to make them come back. That's the hardest task.
It sounds like it. How has it grown over the years? You just said you had 30,000 people. Are you expecting 30,000 this year, or is that your average?
We had every year about 10% raise and like 8%, 10%, 11% like increase of visitors. That's quite good. And so we hope, of course, we're going to go for the 30,000 and hope to have more. At the end, the art industry also works in the word of mouth sort of way, right? So I can talk as much as I want about my product, but it's a lot better if other people talk about my product. So that's why it takes so long, you know, that's why this whole planning period and cycle period, because you start talking and then you need to ignite other people that do the talking for you. And you only can show your product once a year.
Right.
So in order to ignite, you need them to at least come and to ignite that energy, and then they will go on and eventually support your mission and support your vision.
Yeah, and then when they leave, they are talking about how much fun they had at that event and let's go next year. Yeah, and inviting other people to go. What advice do you have for artists who are participating in art fairs and how to sort of best help sort of maintain that environment and also sell their work?
Artists seem not to always love art fairs because they say it's just so much art, so much things to do, too many people, but it's a selling mechanism. So what I always say is provide material about your work, provide a text about your work, help the galleries do their job. If you are around sometimes, if you live in that city where the fair is at, or if you have a major work, sometimes it depends how much you love to talk, but sometimes it helps for the artist to be present because also collectors and museum people, if they're interested, they're also mostly interested also to hear something more from the artist himself or herself, you know, and to learn more the way they work. So if you are from that city or from that region, support the gallery to do their job and provide information. And if you can, be there, but talk to your gallery first. They might not appreciate it always. So
if you just show up.
Yeah. sometimes I also see dealers that they work like in a good cop, bad cop with an artist. You know, if they sell, they are like talking to each other, and the artist helps the dealer to make a point. You know, so I see that like it's a good dynamic. You know, the dealer says something, the artist says something. You know, they have sometimes like a sales routine, which is really nice.
Oh, that's interesting. I know a lot of artists have a difficult time talking about their work, or I think my guess would be to be at an art fair in a booth is difficult for a lot of artists because they're so used to being alone in their studios that it's just all of a sudden 30,000 people coming through over 5 days, and it's just exhausting for them.
I mean, I always say get a beer at the bar, chat to people, come back at the booth, you know. So it's exhausting. You don't need to hang around always at your own work. But I think it helps just to, I don't know, maybe you see someone you like of your colleagues, of a curator that you know that you like. I think if you're halfway sociable, I think hanging out at the bar and have a beer with a colleague doesn't hurt.
No, it doesn't. It loosens you up a little at least.
Exactly so.
The thing that's interesting to me about it is, in the same way that I know the artists who are listening to this are going to be like really fascinated by, ooh, what happens behind the scenes and how does this happen? How does it start? What are all the things that have to be put in place for this event to go off successfully and all these things? There's that fascination. And sometimes when that same fascination is applied to the artists, meaning collectors, a lot of times want to know about you and they want to know the details that might seem to an artist really pedestrian are really fascinating.
That's true. So also collectors, depending on what sort of type of collectors, they might not want to meet the artist always, but I think still the tendency is more, yes, they actually want to meet the person with the work that they're really fascinated with, that they really love, and that they invite to their own space, you know, and to be in their own space. So I think that's a very human trait. I think that's still a good thing. So I'm not a fan of avoiding all human conversation and interaction. So I'm still interested to, even if the person that I'm talking to is like not like super friendly, I'm okay with that. You know, I'm just actually interested to learn more about the work and how they work and why they work and why they decided to do, I don't know, a different series after that series and how they got to that. I think that's fascinating, and it might not fit every time into an intellectual or theoretical text. You know, sometimes it's just information like that that gets people going and being more and further interested in an artwork.
I'm curious, you mentioned this and I've heard this before and I can understand why, but do you think more collectors do or don't want to meet with the artist?
I think the tendency is still that they want to meet, but there are definitely collectors that say, well, I have so much artwork and I really know what I go for. I really know my direction. And I'm happy just to know the artwork because it really fits into my collection. And I'm really thankful for that work of art. And I'm good with that because I really know this fits into my collection and I'm good with that. And if other people want to dig more into the fascination, maybe learn even about themselves as collectors, why they are like so fascinated. I mean, the more mature, I cannot really say. I've just found these two types of collectors, the ones that they know 100% when a work fits into their collection and one that doesn't fit into their collection. So these people tend to be like more clear that they're happy, like, just with the work, and no, they're happy to meet. And the other ones that are really like curious to learn more, they might not be like as streamlined in what they want as collectors in their collection. They still want to like find out more like humanly traits or more like maybe explain to themselves why they are fascinated so much with that work. You know, they want to like understand it more. And this is like yeah, I don't know, it's an abstract work, but I'm really like so fascinated. I don't know where it comes from. It's the vibration. You know, they want to like hear it from the artist themselves, from the source. Someone else explain it to them. Why does it have such an effect on me? Can you maybe, you artist, maybe help me to find the right words for it? I see also that trait.
That makes a lot of sense. I would imagine early collectors are in that very curious and exploratory mode. And then after they mature, they know what they want. It's not, I don't know if this is the best way to put it, but it sort of reminds me of, you know, travelers. There's, if you go to a city, for example, for the first time, you're just, you're looking up, you're looking around, you're looking at everything, and it's all amazing. But if you've been to that city 20 times, you're just walking straight to your favorite cafe and that's it.
And it's as good as the first time, but you're just really like eager to go to that cafe. You're like, you see the rest, but you're just really as happy as the first time, but in that particular cafe, in that particular city. Yes, I agree.
Exactly. Yeah. You mentioned that your art fair has been growing, seems like very well, 8 to 10% seems excellent to me. I don't know the industry that well, but that seems like a very good growth rate. But I'm curious, like for the art fair industry as a whole, is it growing or is it?
I think art fairs tend to have good visitor rates. So we have a little bit the situation. So there was just an article out, I think, in the New Yorker. In the New York magazine, about the visitor rates and galleries. And different art critics have been really moaning about it, that galleries are not very well visited anymore. And there was an initiative also in New York of like combining different gallery openings in one night and to create like a stream of visitors. And I think people are thinking into that direction because people tend, they seem not so eager to go to the galleries anymore. And we see that as well. We here in Vienna, there's always aligned openings. So people do go to see these shows. Yes, the everyday visitor rate could be better, but the stream is still there, especially in these organized events where people see their companions, their friends. So they tend to meet up, go to see the shows together. That's still working. Art fairs do have an increasing or quite stable visitor rate, I would say, because it's normally a huge event in these cities. So it has like different components. Of course, it invites always all the local galleries. So local galleries come together, they invite their collectors and museum people. Then international visitors are coming, and it's mostly that one big social event of that evening that would combine politicians or big business coming in. And that's the night where people are being photographed, you know, might not be the red carpet situation with an evening gown, but it's like the social event of that night. And people do prepare for that. So I think since art became popular to talk about artists, artist personas, collectors, there's something very social or favorable about this creative aura that is being associated with either artists or collectors, you know, or, and that's good. So it's good that art gets attention.
Yeah, it sounds like, I think because it's a special event and it doesn't happen all the time, that makes it even more special. And, you know, you're putting so much effort into it that it makes people appreciate it more, I guess, in that sense, that it's like, oh, this is not something I can do every day. It's just one time a year. And if I want to go there, then that's it. Why do you think it is that people are going to galleries less?
And I think it's also easy for visitors because it's like pre-selected. The only choice you have to take is you have to come. Everything else is done. Everything else is there. There's a pre-selection of cafes and drinks. There's the pre-selection of galleries. So no further hassle. Everything is there. You just go around and take your final decision whether you want to buy, meet, talk, or not talk. That's all. Like everything is done. It's the service package is done for you. Comes
all inclusive and very easy to participate. You just show up and have fun.
Yeah.
And enjoy the work.
Yes, and I think gallery shows, I mean, it's been a lot of conversation about it. It's one, people see still a lot of art, but they do it online. So they do see a lot of art. So, of course, I see a lot of art in my Instagram or in my Facebook. I do see a lot of art. And it seems, oh, but I've seen this show and online. I've been to that gallery online. And then you're like, oh, it's already late or I'm working late. And I've seen it already online. I even commented on it and I've seen the work. And I've seen the work before somewhere else. So I'm good with the online version. And I love the artist. I wrote to the artist or I wrote to the gallerist. I've seen it. Or even not, I'm just going to go and see what this artist or that artist did in the latest show online. So that's why I'm like, I'm still in favor of human interaction. But yes, online is taking a lot of space. And that's good too. So we get the whole world could potentially see a work of art. That's good. But it's the context. I mean, we're not only visual people. We're also, I don't know, that's why in the cinema they have sound and things to it. So we would also have different dimensions to perceive an artwork. So the online only leaves us with the visual component.
Right. And it's usually being seen like, you know, whatever, 3 inches, just this tiny little, this is what you're seeing when the work is meant to be experienced up close.
I'm not in a Cartesian state that I see you only have to. I'm appreciative a lot of the internet, and I think it can and will do a lot of good also for artists, because I think we're all on the internet constantly and we look for quality content. Quality is king. So I think art gives quality content. And I think that's why it's also so popular on Instagram, because it gives you, I mean, you can only look at so many, I don't know, Hello Kitties or all kitsch content, you know. So people that have spare time, I mean, and we doodle around, I don't know, in the train, we doodle around and look for quality content, something that can stimulate us. And I think art can stimulate and can be interesting and can be very to you, you know, it can take upon a person. I think we are a little bit away still from all the instrument that the internet can eventually give to us, how to make it most useful for artists. Because, I mean, my big claim is I think there's a lot of, like, not interesting content that gets a lot of attention and people, I don't know, buy things and interact with things that is just really bad content. So I just believe that it will take maybe another couple of years that we learn for the artistic community, how can we communicate artistic content better? Because I think it can be very quality-wise. There's so much to explore and people want to be inspired. I see, I don't know, young people in that generation that consumes a lot of things online. I think they're actively looking for good content. But we also, at this, as I said, the artistic community has to learn better how to make use of that properly.
Right. It seems like that with Instagram and with social media, what we've done a really good job at is using it to get people's attention. Artists are selling a lot of work through Instagram and through social media. I mean, they're selling a lot of work directly that way. But I think the next step is to get people to not just appreciate it, but to go see it and go see it in context and see, you know, have that appreciation of, yeah, I can flip through this on my phone and I might find it interesting, but to understand the difference between seeing it on a phone and seeing it in real life. I think your sort of average person might not get that.
Exactly. So I think the internet does a lot of good things, but I think, like, I'm still expecting one big leap for the communication of cultural or artistic content. I still expect that there will be something that will help to communicate that content and motivate people to eventually go to see a work physically.
Right. And I think what's missing is the gallery's role has always been sort of curation. And the good and the bad part of the internet is there's nothing is being curated. your average person is seeing everything and has nothing to put it into context as to whether or not that is a good piece of art or what the artist's intention are, like being able to see along the spectrum, the body of work of that artist, the progression of that artist. A lot of times they're just seeing one piece or maybe a very short span of that artist's career. You know, like 1 year is a very short amount of time in an artist's production, you know?
Yeah. So I think people, so my assumption is people will eventually get bored with flat content. And I see that. So people spend all of the time in front of the internet. So it's like with bad journalism, right? So you can only look at so much BuzzFeed articles. Then you get like, you got like the system and then it's fine. And it's like, it doesn't make you laugh or smile anymore. You just want then to read like a real argument for something or about something, right? But since we are like caught on the internet, we're constantly looking for good content. So I also believe that we as the consumers of visual content, that we will learn how also the average consumer that is not from the art world will learn, like their eye will be also trained and they will look for information about an artist. And either this will be like interesting and the context will be interesting or not, you know, because I think people will be trained, visually also trained. That's what I said. Like you can only like seize that much flat content, non-interesting. It can be flickering, you know, it can be sort of get your attention first. But then if you see three of it, you're like, ah, okay, fine, that's not interesting, you know. So I think it's like a training period. So I expect that there will be like that the internet will have some more positive effects also on like good artwork that might not be as easy or as flat that will appeal right away to you.
Yeah, that's interesting. And with the development of technology and the ability to, that's going to be, I think, an interesting transition. What I'm thinking about is we have the ability to take almost 3D pictures now. So people can kind of walk around an image and show you like all the way around it, but that's still not the same. You know, like that will be, I think, an interesting kind of trick to see online that catches your attention first, but eventually you're going to want to walk in and experience it yourself.
Of course, I'm not taking away the physical. I'm just because I've seen like who's the loudest, who has the catchiest phrase, who has the catchiest image. And that's what I see. It's like with journalism, right? So it's like these flat journalism, it will wear off. It wears off on us. You know, you can just like Google it through like, okay, you got the system and then you're actually looking like for flesh to engage with, like a good argument. And I think that's also visually. You can only take in that many, I don't know, pinkish, like pleasing something. And then you're like, if you're being caught and you have time on the internet that you have to spend, which we all have sort of, because this is also part of our daily routine now, then people will start like, look at things differently. They will learn not to buy by face value only, but actually to a little bit look around and to see if you see 10 works of a flat work, then you're like, okay, that's actually not interesting. It might be catchy, but it's not ultimately not interesting.
They'll develop the ability to distinguish between, you know, something that's really superficial and doesn't have a lot of depth to it to an artist who's really more deeply exploring, you know, in depth. And it's, you know, whether that's literally three-dimensional or, you know, you're talking about the artist having a conversation with the work that they're creating and with the viewer who's seeing it and collecting it.
Exactly. So, I mean, we're just seeing so much images constantly. So you eventually want to have a filter that helps you to select all the images. Otherwise, it just becomes too much, right? However, so you will develop a filter how to look at good quality versus bad quality. It's like Facebook did with good journalism versus bad journalism, right? So there, I expect that some tools like that will come up that will help the user mature their experience, tailor it.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see when that happens. Somebody out there is probably working on it already, or they will now.
I believe so, because otherwise it's just like, how can you like use the internet if you can't use like a search engine? How will you find the right output information that you're looking for? You can only apply instruments like search engines and search words to actually find it. So I think also the visual information of Instagram will go through filters that will help to put filters so that you can actually clean it out for yourself, things that you actually look for. Because right now it's just a stream of images that are either like, I don't know, happy days, sad days, dogs, kitties, you know, but I think there must be like a second level of search engine and third level of search engine.
Yeah, that makes sense. Right now, it just seems like everybody, we're at the sort of visual equivalent of everybody's screaming at you saying, look at me, look at me, look at me, and you don't hear it anymore. So when is Art Vienna? When will you be ready for people to come?
September 26th to the 30th. So it's the beginning of autumn season in Europe. I mean, we are ready now. So it's like, I'm ready to roll, but people are still booking hotels and everything. So the VIP department is working, of course. And I mean, we're all planned out. It's now the social season for me. I'm going out and meeting for the collectors and artists, and it's really nice. So it's like, I feel very ready.
Yeah, that sounds fun. All the hard work is done and now you can enjoy it.
Yeah.
Very nice.
In an art fair, you're like, you don't enjoy. You enjoy like the last hour of the fair. Till then, like you hold your breath. You're like, I don't want to jinx it. How is it going? You understand it's going quite well. You're like, let's wait till Sunday. Let's wait till Sunday. So we are superstitious like that.
I don't blame that. I think we're all like that to some extent, that you spend so much time and energy putting this thing together. And then when it happens, you're just like, I think everything's working, but let's wait until the end. Thank you, Christina, so much for being on the show. And it was wonderful talking to you. I learned a lot.
Thank you so much for your time. And yeah, if you ever want to come to Vienna, let me know.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Savvy Painter podcast with Christina Steinberger Fund, the art director of Vienna Contemporary. You can find show notes for this episode at savvypainter.com/podcast. There you'll find links to connect with Christina, as well as links to the Vienna Contemporary. The Vienna Contemporary is held each year in Austria. So if you're there or planning a trip to Europe, this year, 2018, it's September 27th through the 30th. The Savvy Painter podcast is made possible by listener donations. I have been working hard to bring you tips and techniques to help you out in your studio, and in-depth interviews with artists and professionals who are gracious enough to share their stories. And by sharing their stories, they show the rest of us that we are not alone. Big or small, your contribution matters. So with that, I'd like to give a huge thanks and a shout out to some very special people. Andrea DePreter, Linda Brandon, Frederick Marsh, Bitsy Broughton, Wright Design, Jiyoung Kim Studio, Joan Greer, John Weber, Gabrielle McDermott, Deb Anderson, The Roaring Artist, Carla Roth, Kenneth Burke, Alexis Redden, Jamie Kirkland, Kathy Beeler, Sylvia Bailey, Amy Lamp, Art of Joy, Barry Koplowitz, Gail Height, Robin Delaney, and Corin Salachka. I am so, so grateful for your support. You keep this podcast going and help other artists make an impact. So big or small, your contribution matters, and I am so very grateful for your help. So until the next time, this is Antrice Wood with the Savvy Painter podcast. Thank you so much for listening.